To the Sri Shrimad Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananda Kota Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nahachari Shri Haridasa Kuru Ki Jai. All glorious to assembled devotees. All glorious to assembled devotees. All glorious to assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Shri Guru and Shri Guru. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Mastaya Bhutalaya Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Kanamani. Namaste Sarasvati and Gauravam Vichani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatari Sita. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Verse 25. Remembrance of Lord Krishna. Vasudevasya Devakyam Jato Bhojendra Bandhane Chikirshur Bhagavanasya Shama Jena Vyachchita Vasudevasya Devakyam Jato Bhojendra Bandhane Chikirshir Bhagavanasya Shama Jena Vyachchita Vasudevasya Devakyam Jato Bhojendra Bandhane Chikirshir Bhagavanasya Shama Jena Vyachchita
Vasudevasya Devakyam
Vasudevasya.
Vasudevasya.
Of the wife of Vasudev.
Devakyam.
In the womb of Devaki.
In the womb of Devaki.
Jata.
Jata.
Born of.
Born of.
Bhoja Indra.
Bhoja Indra.
Of the king of the Bhojas.
Of the king of the Bhojas.
Vandhane.
Vandhane.
In the prison house.
In the prison house.
Chikirshu.
Chikirshu.
For doing.
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead.
Asya,
of the earth.
Sham,
welfare. Ajena, by Brahma. Abhyachita,
being prayed for.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, being prayed to by Brahma to bring welfare to the earth, was begotten by Vasudeva in the womb of his wife Devaki in the prison of the king of Bhoja. Report. Although there is no difference between the Lord's pastimes of appearance and disappearance, the devotees of the Lord do not generally discuss the subject matter of his disappearance. Vidura inquired indirectly from Uddhava about the incident of the Lord's disappearance by asking him to relate Krishna Katha, or topics on the history of Lord Krishna. Thus Uddhava began the topics from the very beginning of his appearance as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison of Kamsa, the king of the Bhojas, at Mathura. The Lord has no business in this world, but when he is so requested by devotees like Brahma, he descends on the earth for the welfare of the entire universe. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.8. Pritrinaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dhanamasam sapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Om jnanatam randasya gnanjana salakaya chaksurumitamina tasmai shri gurave namaha panchakalpa tribhyascha kripa sindhu bhye vacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So we're switching gears a little bit from the last couple of verses. Uddhava has been generally glorifying Krishna throughout this chapter, and in the last verses, he's particularly showing Krishna's great mercy, specifically how he gave mercy to Putana and how he gave mercy to actually all of the demons that he killed, how they all became liberated in different ways. That was discussed yesterday. Most of them gained impersonal liberation, but some of them, like Putana, gained a higher result. So in all these ways, Uddhava was thinking that Krishna is very, very wonderful in doing this. Now, because he's been asked by Vidura to talk about Krishna and his pastimes, he begins to systematically relate Krishna's pastimes. So the next several verses, we're going to get just like little snippets or little synopsises of different pastimes. Beginning with his birth, which is today's. And so although Krishna's just disappeared, and obviously everyone's very affected by this, all the devotees, Vidura asks about it indirectly. And Prabhupada explains that the devotees do not really care to discuss the Moshalya Leela or Krishna's disappearance. And we can understand that it's not a very palatable topic. It doesn't give joy to the devotees particularly. Even though we know that Krishna appears and disappears systematically in different universes, so it's like the rising and the setting of the sun, still, it was a great loss to the devotees, and it was a very, very painful experience for them. And of course, at this moment, when Krishna disappeared, was also the advent of Kali Yuga, right? So, you know, particularly inauspicious, Krishna's disappearance as far as the universe. So anyway, we're going back to the beginning, and Uddhava is describing the appearance or the birth of Lord Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada says in his purport that the Lord has no business in this world, but comes at Brahma's request. So Krishna is always spiritual. He never assumes a material body. He really has nothing to do with the material energy except indirectly through his agents. So he has no need or attraction for the material world. Why does he come here? All of his enjoyment is actually through the spiritual energy. Krishna's devotees' relationships are spiritual. And within the spiritual body devotee, they're relating and experiencing love and pastimes with Krishna in his always eternal spiritual body. But he does come to this material world for the benefit of the devotees. And here specifically we're talking about requested by the devotees, requested by Brahma to come to relieve the earth of its burden. In the Bhagavatam 10.239, this is still prayers by the demigods while he's in the womb of Devaki. They say, O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. So they're also repeating this idea that it's only through his pleasure potency or his spiritual energy, basically to give pleasure or to give happiness or relief for his devotees, that he comes. So in this verse, there's a description of Krishna's appearance as contrasted with the living entities, who generally... it says the living entities are conducted by your external energy. So in most cases, the living entity is bound up by the laws of material nature, the external energy, the prakriti of the Lord. Now, in the description, we see that Krishna is not bound by material laws of karma. He's free. He's independent. And it indicates how Krishna's appearance can also liberate the suffering jiva. When he comes, he gives all auspiciousness to the world. It's described here that Prabhupada says, when he's so requested by devotees, he descends on this earth for the welfare of the entire universe. So what to speak of for the welfare of his devotees? He's here for the entire universe, to help everyone, all living entities. So we go back to the history very quickly. Obviously, the earth was overburdened by all of these demoniac kings. Bhumi, feeling this as Mother Earth, went to Lord Brahma and said, please help me, do something. And Lord Brahma and all the other demigods understood this, the burden for the entire universe, actually, because the demigods were also harassed by the demons at this time. And so they went to approach, they went to Swetadweep and approach Shiradaksha Vishnu. And so they ask him, please help us. And he says, I will very soon be adventing on the earth. So, he prays, sells them, you demigods, you come along too, along with your wives. And then he brings his whole entourage for his appearance here. And it's described, he descends to the earth for the welfare of the entire universe. Now, then Prabhupada quotes a very famous verse, Bhagavad Gita 4.8, Paritshrinaya Saranam, Vinashaya Jaduskritam, Dharma Samstapa Nartayo, Sambhuvami Yuge Yuge. So three reasons that Krishna gives for his appearance: to deliver the pious, to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to establish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium, yuge yuge, which means basically once in a day of Brahma, is what this means, that he will make his appearance, at least in this universe. And so when he comes, he fulfills these promises. He kills many demons like Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal, what to speak of those in Vrindavan, Bakasura, Putana, Agasura, and all those. I was reading somewhere in the 10th canto that before Vasudeva and Devaki are still in prison, and you know, Kamsa every once in a while gets changes of moods, doesn't he? Sometimes he'll think, oh, I've been terrible. I should just let them go. You know, I should let Vasudeva. And so what he does, he goes and he consults with his ministers and his council. And they were describing who some of these members were. I mean, these were people like the Keshi demon, Bakasura, Agasura. He had a real brain trust going there, really good advice he was getting, you know, from, you know, all these big demons. So naturally they continue to influence this. Yes, you're right. We should just kill all the children. We should do this. We should do that. And, you know, and he does these horrible, oppressive things on the bad advice of the rest of the demons. So anyway, they're all taken care of, every one of them. We have this whole list of all the demons that were killed by Krishna, and eventually we get finally to the point of Dantavakra and then his brother, and that's pretty much the end of them. Now the only other problem is, of course, is the Kurus, Duryodhana and his bunch still. But other than that, all the other demoniac kings have been destroyed in the world, so he does that. He establishes religion. He speaks the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He also speaks to many other people, gives great instruction, say, to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Uddhava Gita of the Bhagavatam. But more than that, more than establishing religious principles, more than killing all the demons, establishing righteousness again in the world, he comes for his devotees. And that's described many places. Srila Prabhupada said it's not necessary for Krishna to come to kill the demons. Prabhupada says, as far as the atheists are concerned, this is a purport to 4.8, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear to destroy them, as he did with the demons, Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees, who are always harassed by the demoniac. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa, she and her husband Vasudeva were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than to kill Kamsa. But both were performed simultaneously, which is so often the case that Krishna, performing his wonderful pastimes, accomplishes many things at once. Many purposes are served by everything that Krishna does. So he was able to fulfill all of these purposes by his appearance. You know, Srila Prabhupada says in a purport to 2.7.26, certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally for such purposes of killing the demons, but he actually descends to exhibit his transcendental activities in order to encourage his pure devotees who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord. So obviously when Krishna descends on this planet, it goes beyond just the immediate devotees that are there with him at that time, 5,000 years ago, who of course are all, you know, ecstatic and enjoying so much the relationship with Krishna, and he's giving so much pleasure to them, but his influence extends. Here we are 5,000 years later, and we're still discussing, relishing, enjoying, and learning from Krishna's appearance, from his instructions, from his wonderful pastimes that he does. So in other words, he encourages pure devotees for quite some time to go until Kali Yuga gets too bad and there aren't going to be too many left. But for now, we can all appreciate Krishna's appearance. So he appears for his own pleasure and to engage in loving pastimes with devotees. The history, of course, of his appearance is Vasudeva and Devaki offer prayers to him when he's born. And then Krishna explains sort of the historical, you know, what the reason for his appearance was. The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, "My dear mother, best of the chaste, in your previous birth in the Swayambhuva millennium, you were known as Krishna Vasudeva, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa." So they wanted a son like Krishna. They performed austerities for 12,000 celestial years. Very difficult. So they got, Krishna said, "I will be born as your son three times." So first as Krishna and Sutapa, he was born as Krishna Garbha. Then they came again as Aditi and Kashyapa, and Vamanadeva became their son. Now, finally in this third birth, the best one, As Devaki and Vasudev, Krishna himself becomes their son. So he completely fulfilled their desires. Anyway, Devaki had undergone great hardships due to the atrocities of Kamsa. In other words, just because Krishna was to be born, she had experienced all of this because on her wedding day, of course, we all know the voice in the sky comes and says to Kamsa that, "You fool, the eighth child of your sister Devaki will kill you." So, of course, immediately he's ready to kill her. Vasudev, you know, is able to talk him down until finally he just decides to put them in the prison and wait for the eighth son to be born. But, of course, again, with all the good counsel he gets, he decides he better kill every one of the children just to make sure. So six children are killed. The seventh, of course, I don't want to go too long into side stories, but that becomes that's Balaram. And then, of course, the eighth son is Krishna. Krishna appeared in the 8th month. A little bit early to fool, it's explained to fool Kamsa, so he wouldn't be too alert yet. So in the 8th month of her pregnancy, he's born, and it's described, his birth, Bhagavatam 10.3, 9, and 10. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes, and who bore in his 4 hands the 4 weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest were the marks of Srivats, on his neck the brilliant Kastupa gem. He was dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkled uncommonly with the valuable Vaidurya. Vasudev saw the child shining brightly with brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and ornaments. Not your usual child was born. Actually, Sanatana Goswami or Jiva Goswami, I think Sanatana Goswami explains, he was actually born as a baby. You know, and then immediately assume the form, the forearm form. He wasn't born like that. You know, it would have been quite difficult for Devaki, I assume. Anyway, he's born, immediately assumes his forearm form, very, very beautiful. Why? Well, he appeared the opulent forearm form basically to convince Vasudeva and Devaki that he actually had come as the Supreme Lord for the 3rd time. In other words, they were very attracted. They were very much in the Vatsalya, parental, rasa, but they also wanted to see Krishna in his opulence. They still had some desire, a little bit of desire to see the greatness of the Lord. And he also wanted to let them know, yes, I have actually come as I said I would. I am, you know, just so they knew, you know, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is also instructive to all of us in many ways, because we need to also understand clearly the position of Krishna. And this is why, of course, we've heard many times that the Bhagavatam is set up for the 9 cantos as the basics of understanding Krishna's position until you get to the 10th canto, which explains his very sweet pastimes, particularly his Vrindavan Leela, but all of his pastimes when he appears as Krishna. So we don't want to misunderstand those and think that they're something ordinary or he's like a human being or any mistakes that people still seem to make, but nevertheless, all of the previous instruction is there for us to know the real position of Krishna. So that's established early on in Bhagavatam in the 3rd canto, in the first canto of the 3rd chapter. Krishna is established as Swayam Bhagavan, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead with all power in 1.3.28. The Krishna Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami begins with an explanation of this verse, 1.3.28. And it goes on for about 80, 90 pages. It's one of the longest purports on a verse I've seen in our scripture. But Jiva Goswami is establishing this verse, 1.3.28. How important that is, that all the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Like, full stop. That's it. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. And Jiva Goswami explains that this is what's called the Paribhashya Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which means it's an explanatory phrase or regulative statement for all other statements in the book. In other words, it's the most important verse that basically the rest of the entire book elaborates on. It's just stated once, but it pertains to all future discussions of the topic. So if you ever get confused about anything else in the Bhagavatam, well, who is Krishna exactly? You go back to that. Swayam Bhagavan, supreme, absolute, original personality of Godhead. Okay? Thus the Bhagavatam establishes that, Swayam Bhagavan. Swayam means he's the first, the original, the source of all. No one is his source. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse 1 through 28, he says, according to Srila Jiva Goswami's statement, in accordance with authoritative sources, Lord Krishna is the source of all other incarnations. It is not that Lord Krishna has any source of incarnation. All the symptoms of the Supreme Truth in full are present in the person of Lord Sri Krishna. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord emphatically declares, there is no truth greater than or equal to himself. In the stanza, the word swayam is particularly mentioned to confirm that Lord Krishna has no other source than himself. Yeah. So, all other incarnations, avatars, purusha expansions, lila avatars, guna avatars, manvantaras, are all plenary portions of Krishna. What a plenary portion means that it's a part of the original that is equally empowered. Okay? So it's like an ambassador is empowered. In other words, they're considered to be to represent, say, the United States, if you're a United States ambassador to England. You're not the president, you don't have the power of the president, or you're not the whole country, but you do have, you're established, you know, that you, in a sense you do, you're acting in that capacity. Of course, the difference is, all the incarnations really do have Krishna's powers. It's stated how he is there in all of his incarnations, none of them are separate from him, so what's the difference? None of the other forms display all the qualities of Krishna. In other words, they're displayed in different parts and different portions depending upon the particular need of that incarnation that Krishna has. So this is the difference. When Krishna comes, is really the only incarnation that he's completely displays all of his opulences, all of his sweetness, all of his qualities, his full beauty, everything is manifest in the form of Krishna, as well as all power and everything, riches, everything else, which we see in his pastimes. So, another explanation by Srila Prabhupada of this. All the incarnations, this is again, it's purport to 1328. All the incarnations of the Lord, including the Lord himself, descend on different planets of the material world and different species of life to fulfill particular missions. The Lord is full of all opulences, all prowess, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. When they are partially manifested through the plenary portions or parts of the plenary portions, it should be noted that certain manifestations of his different powers are required for particular functions. Now he gives an example. When in the room, small electric bulbs are displayed. It doesn't mean that the electric powerhouse is limited to just those small bulbs. That same powerhouse can supply power to operate large-scale industrial dynamos with greater volts. Similarly, the incarnation of the Lord displays limited power because so much power is needed at a particular time. I think that's pretty clear. Krishna's appearance has also explained another explanation, sort of, or a different angle of it, is in the name-giving ceremony by Garga Muni. This happened shortly after Krishna's birth and is described in the 8th chapter of the 10th canto. Garga Muni tells Nanda Maharaj there, his son is as good as Narayan. Now that was always an interesting statement, wasn't it? Because good as Narayan, what does that mean? I mean, is he Narayan? He's empowered by Narayan? Is he, he's a demigod who's almost as powerful? And of course, there are different speculations, sometimes by the coward men and the villagers about Krishna's actual position. But he does say, Garga says, your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he's appeared in the blackish color. And it says, in another Dwarpa Yuga, he appeared as Lord Ramachandra in the color of Shuka, Para. All such incarnations have now assembled in Krishna. So Prabhupada says, partially explaining position, Lord Krishna, and partially covering the facts, Garga Muni indicated your son is a great personality and he can change the color of his body in different ages. He says, is your son assume these different colors But he is the personality of God. He indirectly said he is the supreme personality of Godhead. So he didn't say, your son is a person, is God. He said, your son had these different colors, and you happen to name the colors of the incarnations of the supreme personality of Godhead. Okay. So it says, because of Kamsa's atrocities, Garga Muni tried to avoid disclosing this fact, but he indirectly informed Nanda Maharaj that Krishna's son was the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, here's a little bit of a contrast. He shows himself immediately after his birth as, you know, four-armed Vishnu, supreme personality of Godhead, to Devaki and Vasudeva, but it's somewhat hidden from Nanda and Yashoda. Okay? So a few verses later, Garga Muni concludes, says, in conclusion, therefore, Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayan. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayan. You should all raise this child very carefully and cautiously. You see anything interesting in that statement? That he's as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's Narayan, but you should, you know, guard him very carefully, be very cautious, make sure that he's safe. Why would you need to do that if he's Narayan? Because Garga doesn't want to disturb Nanda's relationship with Krishna as his son. That Vatsalya Rasa is so nice and so sweet, and Krishna appreciates that so much in his devotees, that Garga is very aware of this, you know, obviously if you're a devotee of the Lord, he's very aware of this, and so he's very careful in what he says. It's kind of like, yeah, he's this, he's not, you know, yeah, he's like Narayan, but, you know, he's your son, you have to protect him. In other words, the knowledge of Krishna's supremacy is what's called, quote, contrary to his bhava. It wouldn't be pleasing so much to Nanda and Yashoda. And so, he described that to Nanda and the coward men, to give some idea of his greatness. And it's described that they actually had really no idea. You remember in all the early demons, they always their attributions are always something else, right? Oh, that must happen because of this. It just happened because of the grace of Narayan, you know, or it wasn't really Krishna, something else happened. You know, there's always another explanation for how Krishna could be as a baby killing these demons. Well, after a while, it kind of became clear that something else was going on here, right? So it's described that after two events, really, the lifting of Govardhan Hill, which everybody saw him doing it, you know, 7 days, huge mountain. And then, later, Krishna reveals the loka to the coward man. Remember, they go into the water, and Krishna shows them the spiritual world, the loka Vrindavan, which they're amazed by. And they also see Krishna is there. Krishna's the center of the loka Vrindavan. So by that time, they're thinking he's pretty special. Okay. But it still didn't disturb their Vatsalya Rasa. In a similar way, Mother Yashoda later, remember the dirt incident. The boys accused him of eating his dirt, even eating dirt. He said, no, they're lying. He said, well, Balaram even said it, and he wouldn't lie. So she says, all right, Mother, if you don't believe me, look at my mouth. So she looks in his mouth and sees the entire universe, the cosmic manifestation, all these powers, vibhutis, everything of Krishna. So what happens? She's bewildered. She, and then for a moment, she understands who he is, the absolute truth. She says, only by illusion do I think in terms of bodily relationships, but I think that you are my son, and Nanda Maharaj is, you know, my husband, and I'm the queen of all these subjects, only by the power of the illusory energy. And then she's like really confused, then finally, out of kindness, Yogamaya covers her again, so she sees Krishna as just her son. In 10.844, it's described, immediately forgetting Yogamaya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Yashoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection in her heart for his transcendental child. Prabhupada says, Mother Yashoda regarded the vision of the universal form within Krishna's mouth as an arrangement of Yogamaya, like a dream. As one forgets everything after a dream, Mother Yashoda immediately forgot the entire incident. As her natural feeling of affection increased, she decided, now let me just forget this incident. I do not mind. Here's my son. Let me kiss him. So her natural maternal rasa and love was actually increased. So, of course, this is a very natural, interesting thing that we observe in Krishna's dealings. That Krishna and the devotees enjoy these pastimes of sweetness more than of opulence. So, Yogamaya very mercifully covers the devotees, because if they're always seeing Krishna as God, how can you see him as your son or your friend that you're playing with out in the cowherd fields, or as your lover, as the gopis are? It'd be very difficult. So to increase these highest feelings of love and affection, and devotion, Yogamaya covers them to see Krishna in their relationship with him. Now, couple examples. Srila Prabhupada gave different stories. He talked about the Supreme Court judge, and then one example he gives, this is from a 1975 lecture. Srila Prabhupada said, there's a story that Prime Minister Gladstone, somebody came to see him. When he was informed, he said, wait, I am busy. So the man was waiting for hours, and he became inquisitive. What is this gentleman doing? So he went to see within that he'd become a horse, taking his child on his backside, playing horse for the boy. That business, what business he was doing, you see? The Prime Minister controlling the British Empire, but he is controlled by his child out of affection. That is called affection. Then Prabhupada also gave an example of the Supreme Court judge. He comes home, and then to his family, he's just their father or their husband, whatever, and they're not seeing him in that way. You can imagine it, after hearing dry legal arguments all day, he probably comes home and he much more enjoys, you know, playing with his, being with his family. And the feeling of the devotees is kind of like if the child, their friends come to one of the Supreme Court judges' children and say, hey, you know, your father's the Supreme Court judge. And they go, yeah, that's really cool, isn't it? Hey, he's going to take us camping this weekend or something, you know, or, you know, we're going to be doing this with him. In other words, they think, yeah, it's nice, but they don't care that much. You know, it's like, yeah. Or isn't it wonderful? It's just, now with Krishna, it's a little more. With Krishna, when his intimate devotees in Vrindavan are confronted with, or they find out, or they understand, or realize some of Krishna's greatness, they just think how wonderful that is. Right? Even the gopis, yeah, you may be God, you may not be God. We just love him. He's just so beautiful. He's so sweet. He's our all in all. Maybe God, yeah. But that's cool too. That's great. But even if we don't really care that much. It's just an amazing how deep and how sweet these relationships with his great devotees. So the fullest understanding, the deepest love, most confidential relationships are shown by this residence of Vrindavan, Krishna's eternal Dham. And they're all shown to us. We are so fortunate that I was just thinking of, you know, what are the chances? Krishna comes one day in the life of Brahma, right? That's 1,000 yuga cycles, is it? Once in the, which are what, 4 billion years, one yuga cycle? 4 billion years, one yuga cycle, 1,000 of those is when Krishna appears. And when Krishna appears, I don't know if it's always, but at least sometimes, occasionally, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also comes. In that same, you know, 28th Dwapara Yuga, the, you know, whatever it is. So here it is, we are 500 years after the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 5,000 years after the appearance of Lord Sri Krishna, and we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Chaitanya, we have all of these writings that tell us all of this. We have wonderful philosophy given by our acharyas that explain it to us, and we have Srila Prabhupada, who has so kindly come to the Western world and translated these Sanskrit scriptures, which I can tell you, at least I would never have read one of these single books in my life if they had not been translated to English. You know, I would have never learned Sanskrit or Bengali for sure. So, what incredible mercy we have received. We have to appreciate the true mercy, and this is the meaning of Krishna's coming into this material world. and said he is coming here to give happiness to the entire universe. And he's coming for his devotees. And that just doesn't mean just Devaki and Vasudeva, but also means us. He's coming for all of us to bring us back, to attract us to his pastimes, to his glories, to his opulences, to everything about him. And for us to decide, yes, this is what I want. And we are fortunate we are picked up by the spiritual master. Only through the mercy of devotees can really one understand. You can't really understand the depth of Krishna conscious philosophy without the association of devotees, without the great pure devotees who have come to help bring us back to him. We have a couple minutes? Okay. I wanted to read one thing. Krishna's beauty. I'll just end with that. Of course, there are four Gitas in the 10th canto. There's, the Gopi Gita, the Venu Gita, the Yugala Gita, and the Brahmara Gita, the Bumblebee. Okay, I really like in chapter 35, it's called the Yugala Gita. And it's really about gopis and singing of Krishna wandering through the forest, really. You know, it's just really, really nice. Okay. Oh, girls, this son of Nanda, who gives joy to the distressed, bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now, please hear something wonderful. When he vibrates his flute, Raja's bulls, deers, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, are all captivated by the sound, and they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if asleep, or like figures in a painting. My dear gopis, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. Then in the company of Balaram and the coward boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their waters stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. O goddesses of Raja, when Krishna is enjoying himself with Balaram on the mountain slopes, playfully wearing a flower garland on the top of his head, he engladdens all with resonant vibrations of his flute. Thus he delights the entire world. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions or comments? Anything? Over here.
Well, it's interesting how the universe goes off course just in the course of time, like Kala. The demons run rampant and the devotees are harassed and Dharma goes off course, mm-hmm. just of its own like accord, I guess material energy and Kala and time. And then Krishna has to come and sort of like correct everything. Mm-hmm.
And no, what are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting how of its own accord, I guess, or if you want to comment on that, it just goes off course. You know, the demons run rampant, devotees are harassed.
Oh, okay.
And then, Dharma goes off course, and then he has to come, like, 4.8, Bhagavad Gita 4.8, he has to come and, like, reestablish everything.
Yeah.
It's
interesting because it almost seems as though by his arrangement, right, that everything is on a very strict, we know Krishna's going to appear in the 28th, Divya Yuga of this particular, the 74th day, like that. So, I think it's two things. It is, obviously everything happens by Krishna's arrangement, but in the material world, there's also the free will of the jivas, right? So we have two things going, and we've got the material energy. And we have the jiva's involvement with material energy and material world. So, now, we have a couple like Dantavakra and Shishupal who are there as a pastime of Krishna, right? They're not demons, they're devotees who, fell from the curse of the four Kumaras and all that. But we also have actual demons, people who have a demoniac nature, and Krishna may arrange for them to all appear together at this particular time, but it's not as though Krishna just made everybody demoniac or something like that, and then he had to reestablish religion. No, this happens because of the course of time. My understanding, at least, is, you know, these people appear at that time in different ages. If you're extremely pious and almost ready to go back, you may get born in Satya Yuga in a really wonderful place, in Brahma Loka or something, so you can finish up and go back. And if you're not, you may be born in Earth and Kali Yuga in America in 2020, you know, whatever. You know, so it's like, I think it's a combination. But Krishna does seem to arrange things in an orderly way. It's not random. It's not haphazard. It's not that everything goes on chaotically, does it? Everything. I mean, even in our ordinary material dealings, you know, we're pretty sure that the sun's going to rise. We can look on, you know, the weather report. It's going to rise at 7:11 or what, at 7:12 or whatever it is tomorrow morning. So everything is arranged perfectly and beautifully by Krishna in the material world by his agents, but also in his coming and going, in his pastimes. But the important thing that we always remember, what's always said, is it's always by his will. Yes, it is happening this time, but it's because he wants it to. He's not obligated to come at a particular time, but he wants to do it that way. And there's a certain point where that's about where my brain, you know, ends its capacity to understand Krishna's will and Krishna's mind.
Well, like you said, they have free will.
His free will. We have free will and Krishna's free will. Yes. Yeah.
And then he has to come in.
And fix, yes. And hopefully attract us to kind of reverse our free will and say, realize, boy, did we make a huge mistake, you know? Bad choice. You know, look at Krishna. Look at his wonderful pastimes. Look at how we can be happy again, really happy. Surrendering to Krishna. Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you. And others?
Well, you said the correct thing is very nice, and it's a good point that she brought, because I was thinking there is a famous verse in chapter 4, Adi Lila. Ichha Shakti Pradhan Krishna Ichha Sarvakarta. It is his desire that actually dominates everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More than Balaram. Even for Balaram, 1 year he didn't even know that Krishna expanded,
right,
because Krishna didn't want him,
right,
to know.
Right.
So then Prabhupada writes in the purport of that verse, he said, when Krishna thought that, oh, I did not give love, pure love, I did not distribute it in a vast capacity, only very few, he desired to come down. The moment he desired to come down, it happened to be Kali Yuga.
Mm-hmm.
So is it really happened to be? It's a very mysterious way of...
Very mysterious.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say, or sometimes they say, his desire coincided, right? Sometimes they use the word, it coincided with the time for when it should happen. So which came first? I don't know. Yeah. He had desire and then he arranges everything, or things
desire.
Happen.
His desire.
His desire has to be first,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Who is keeping track anyway?
Well, right.
That this is this time. You only know from
only after it happened, when it happens,
yeah,
then we know what time it happened.
Exactly.
Okay, I think someone else had a question.
Just a comment when you were talking about how the devotees have their particular rasa, and even if they know that Krishna is God, they don't really care. I like this little story of how when Krishna started to hide from the gopis and they were searching for him, so he appeared in his Vishnu form, and the gopis came and said, you know, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And he said, okay, go over here. But when Radharani came, you know, he couldn't maintain his Vishnu form.
Yeah.
Just because of her love, he turned into his two-arm form.
Yeah, that's a really nice story. Yeah, I mean, they saw him, and they offered a little respect. You know, they were disrespectful. But, you know, have you seen Krishna? Yeah. And then, yes, he was so attracted to Radha that he couldn't maintain it. He wanted her to be attracted to him as Krishna. Nice story. Thank you. Others? Anything else? Yeah.
One might be a little confused by this statement that Prabhupada gives in the purport. The Lord has no businesses in this material world. Like he doesn't care what's happening there, but he only comes because...
Well, I think it means when you say he has no business, means that he doesn't need to come. In other words, remember how we were reading thing about what Prabhupada was saying, that he doesn't need to come here to kill demons. He has so many agencies, you know, he can have, you know, natural disasters kill the demons if he wanted. Or, well, look, who killed Durasana? It's Bhima, right? Right? Yeah. Bhima killed Durasana. He can have anyone do, but, so he doesn't have any business, meaning it's not like an obligation, like going to work. But he wants to come for certain reasons, particularly for his devotees, to give pleasure to his devotees and to show his wonderful pastimes. CTD, I think, has a inspiration.
Well, he has no business here in the sense he has no investment in conditional life. That's not conditional life. But he's not. He's here to come bring him into the back devotional service. So he can do that in the spiritual world. So the only reason why he comes here is to get us back into the party. You know, that the pure devotional service. He has no business in like, geez, I have to build, I have to kick out the British first, and then we can chant Hare Krishna. You know, he's just here to, you know, get people to reestablish his relationship. Well, it's not the business in the sense that, we don't do business with the spiritual master. We don't say, I will give you this if you give me that. That's how we're defining business. You know, it's not a fruit of exchange.
I think that there's two ways we can define business.
Yeah, it's how you define these terms.
Yeah, and when we say, no, sometimes we say, yeah, I don't have any business doing it. Like, I don't care about that. So it's not that you don't care about it. Yes, I mean, I don't have any business. But I think it's more like you were saying, it probably is more of the true sense of business. I don't have any business arrangement where I'm obligated, you know, to have to do. Yeah, yeah. You want to give the Kundra, do you want to speak? Take the mic? No? Okay. Okay, we all straight on that one? Okay, I'll go ahead and feel for a time.
Well, if they wanted that.